My name is Oliver Kraft. I'm a patient at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Washington, D.C., and I am probably never going to get out of here while I live. I accept this. I am here because of the Grin Man, who most people call Strom Sullivan. 37 years ago, in 1969, Sullivan was buried in Glenwood Cemetery on Lincoln Road after he died in the electric chair in Tennessee. His great-grandfather, who he never knew, had set up a trust to make sure all the members of the family were buried in Washington, and so the body was brought to D.C. by train. Strom Sullivan was a gambler and an occasionally violent con artist. In 1966, he lost $300 playing stud poker to a man named Hoffman. At the end of the game, they got into a vicious argument, and Hoffman's dog, a Doberman Pinscher that had been sitting beside him during the game, attacked Strom Sullivan, going for his leg and sinking his teeth in deep. Two men had to drag the dog off him. That night, Sullivan limped a few blocks to the motel where Hoffman was staying, picked the lock on his room, entered, and decapitated the man as he slept, using an axe with a broken handle he'd found in a junkyard. Then Sullivan merely sat in a folding chair outside the room, with the door wide open, examining the wounds the Doberman had inflicted. He fell asleep in that chair, and in the morning a maid walked past him into the room. She immediately ran out and shook Sullivan awake, screaming. His eyes opened, and he looked at her contemptuously and told her to quiet down. He said he knew what had happened because he was the one who had done it. He then got up and walked off, headed back toward his slummy apartment. The police came for him about 4 hours later. He was convicted of first-degree murder and eventually electrocuted. And for years, he lay alone, forgotten, and undisturbed in Glenwood Cemetery. But in 1991, an organization called the Project for Fair Detainment completed a long study of electrocution deaths in America in trying to make it an illegal form of capital punishment. One of the strongest parts of their case was the lesson of what had happened to Strom Sullivan when he was put to death. According to eyewitness reports that some had tried to conceal, the procedure had almost burned Sullivan's scalp off, and his hands had gone utterly black. The Project for Fair Detainment wanted to exhume his body, take photographs, and perhaps perform an autopsy as part of their evidence to show how horrible electrocution was. They got their wish, so in 1991, Strom Sullivan was exhumed. Three people were present when the coffin was opened at the city morgue, and they got a real shock. The damage to Sullivan's body that they had expected was there, but the body was otherwise almost perfectly preserved, after more than 20 years in the ground in the cheapest possible coffin. It was impossible but true. More disturbing still was the look on Sullivan's face. His eyes were wide open, and the coroner present wrote that his lips were stretched wide, showing teeth locked together in a freakish grin. The coroner described himself thinking that Sullivan was laughing at them and wouldn't ever stop. The body was photographed, and the Project for Fair Detainment got what they wanted. There was no need for an autopsy because the body was so flawlessly preserved that it was visually obvious what the electric chair had done to him. Sullivan was then reburied in Glenwood Cemetery in the same grave. The coroner had no explanation for why the body was in such perfect condition. He had seen such a thing once before, but in a zinc coffin in a family crypt with little exposure to the elements. A year went by, and word got out about the mysterious condition of the corpse of Strom Sullivan. The medical department of Alouette University in Oregon got very interested in the body, wanting to study it to find out what could cause such a pristine natural preservation. Sullivan had no relatives left, so the university was able to get permission to exhume him once again, as long as the body would be essentially unaltered after their studies, and returned to the grave within 3 weeks. Before Sullivan's body was shipped to Oregon, its first stop was the coroner's office in D.C. again, where the coffin was opened for the second time. And sure enough, the body was still preserved. And Sullivan still had that awful grin on his face, his eyes wide open, staring. There was something missing, though. Sullivan's left hand, mostly blackened by the grossly miscalculated electric shock that killed him in 1969, was gone from the wrist. Not much was made of this at the time. It was thought that it may have even fallen off when the body was exhumed before. The researchers at Alouette did what they had to do to the body, and 2 weeks later it was back in its grave. Again, no definite answer was found as to why the body seemed so outwardly alive. Over the course of the next few years, a legend grew about Strom Sullivan's corpse, and how it refused to really die, and how year after year he lay there, waiting for someone to dig him up so he could see another human face, and laugh, happy to be dead, and mocking the living. If you grew up in the Brooklyn area of Washington around that time, like I did, there's a chance you may have heard his name mentioned by kids, probably, or around Halloween. A general store on Franklin Street called Elmo's, which closed in 1999, even kept a chair in one corner, occupied only by a sign that advertised it as the actual motel chair that Strom Sullivan had been found sitting in after the murder of the man named Hoffman. The proprietor of the store warned people that anyone who sat in that chair would begin to laugh until they screamed, and then that poor soul's face would freeze that way forever. He said this to me many, many times. In 2005, Strom Sullivan was disinterred for the third time. Two students from George Washington University snuck out to Glenwood Cemetery one night in June and dug up the coffin because they had heard about the legend and wanted to see if it was true, that this was a body that mocked death and life equally. They were fairly well equipped, and after 2 hours of digging, they were able to lift the coffin out and set it beside the gravestone. Then they opened the newer coffin provided by Alouette University and joined the small group of the unlucky who had laid eyes on the fresh-looking body with its missing left hand, the right one partially blackened but intact. But they didn't get to see the terrible grin on Sullivan's face, because his head had been cut off. It was entirely gone. The students left the coffin right where it was and took off into the night, but being a little drunk, they left plenty of evidence behind and were arrested a few days later. This still left the mystery of where Sullivan's head and left hand had gone. It took a month to finally figure it out. The mystery was traced to a part-time caretaker of the cemetery named Oliver Kraft, who is me. Back when I was 9 or so, my father came home one night and showed me a photo he had taken at work. It was a semi-focused picture of Strom Sullivan's corpse, more specifically his grinning face. My father was an attendant at the city morgue. He occasionally used that picture to frighten me when I was bad. "Look how the grin man is laughing at you," he would say. "He knows if you don't behave, you're all his." One day I got a hold of the picture and buried it in our backyard. But my father had something else to terrify me. A few months after the picture was buried, I was sleeping in my room after being punished and sent there to remain shut inside it for 3 days. When I awoke in the dark, sensing something near me, I saw my father sitting in a chair beside my bed. He told me that a lesson had to be taught about forgetting to put the lid on the trash can when it was set out for the night. He leaned forward and placed an object on my pillow beside my head. It was a blackened, severed hand. "The grin man tried to get in here, but I stopped him," my father said. I believed every word. even though I could smell the alcohol on his breath, a smell that always seemed to be there. I had to sleep that night with the grin man's hand on my pillow to remind me of how my father had protected me, even though I had been so clumsy with the trash. I spent that night in and out of consciousness, lying on the very edge of my bed to be as far away as possible from the hand. Occasionally I woke up to see it still there on my pillow. When I awoke the next morning, the hand was gone. From that time on, I knew that the grin man was always near. I dreamed about him 3 or 4 times a week. I never saw the hand again, but I knew that as long as my father was alive, the grin man wouldn't be able to hurt me, and he didn't. But then my father died when I was in one of the hospitals they put me in for killing dogs on the street and some other things. When I got out, I was almost a full adult, but I had no defense against the grin man. I was homeless for a while, but one day I saw an ad in the paper. Glenwood Cemetery was looking for a part-time caretaker. I knew the grin man was buried there, so I applied and got the job. Night after night, I stood over the grin man's grave. Little by little, I could sense him getting stronger. One night, when I knew he was close to getting out, I dug up the grave and sawed off the grin man's head and took it. I felt much calmer after that. I did a bad job of reburying the coffin, which made it easy for the students to get into a year afterward. The paper said that there was one remarkable coincidence about my arrest. The police found me sleeping in a chair on the front porch of the group house I was living in, exactly like a motel maid had once found the grin man after he had decapitated the man who had cheated him. I swear I didn't plan that. It just happened. For a long time, I wouldn't tell the police where I'd put the head. But last week, I developed an infection in my left index finger. I had to tell the doctors that when I sawed off the grin man's head, my finger had been lodged inside his mouth to hold it steady. The jaw closed all at once, and it bit me hard enough to draw blood. And the grin man was still laughing when it happened. Now my blood has been poisoned by his bite, even though it's been 1.5 years since I touched him. They say the infection has nothing to do with that, but I know differently. It's probably how I'll die. They injected me with some kind of painkiller, and when I was weak, I told them I buried his head in the National Arboretum on the edge of the Anacostia River. The arboretum is spread out over 400 acres, so I don't think they'll ever find it. There are so many trees and bushes and flowers there, it's impossible to tell just where I put it. The grin is still there on his face. He never stopped laughing, not for a second. I meant to dig a hole 4 feet deep for the head, but I panicked and I only made it 18 inches deep. I put the head in facing away from the city so that no one will ever have to feel the grin man stare again. I feel better about everything now. All I care about is that I'm cremated, not buried. I'm afraid there may still be a way for the grin man to get me if I'm inside the ground.